Perek Vav. We were talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming to Gidon. There wasn't a lot of people that had merit. Gidon had the merit that he tried to save his father. Now again, at the time, the Midianim were coming in and they were killing everybody and taking everything they had. And they were doing it to an extreme degree. And Gidon, they had some food, they had some grain. They had some grain, and they had to, you know, the problem with wheat is that you need to grind it in order to make bread, as you might know from the, when we serve wheat, the different halachic questions. So the wheat needs to be ground in order to have bread. Grinding of wheat is difficult, and it takes a good amount of effort, and it also is something that the Midianim knew when it was being done. So what they did was Gidon and his father went to a wine press, and they were using that to grind the grain. And Gidon said to his father at one point, he said, look, if they come, you're old, you aren't going to be able to run away. Go home. If they come, I'll run away. I'll try to run away. But therefore, he was trying to protect his father, and that was a merit that he had, that he was doing a mitzvah of kibud av v'em, and that was a merit that he had, that he was willing to be moser nefesh. According to the Medrash, this was on Pesach, which again presents a little bit of a problem because of Chilul Yontif. You know, he was doing it on the first day of Pesach. The night before, we'll see that when the Malach comes to Gidon, he says to him, yesterday we had the Seder and my father talked about Yitzias Mitzrayim, but where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu now? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made everything, he took us out, and then he abandoned us. So this was the first day of Pesach. So again, you can say that they were shomer all the mitzvahs by saying simply that on Yontif we can cook, on Shabbos we cannot cook. But not only can we cook, we can also do all of the things that are needed to prepare food. And on Pesach, one of the things is that we cannot use wheat, we cannot eat wheat from that's grown in the year until the second day of Pesach, until the night of Pesach where the Karban Ober is brought. It's called, there's an issur called Chadosh, eating new grain until the sacrifice is brought on Pesach, and then you can eat it, and then the second Omer sacrifice is brought on Shavuos. So that is how they explain what Gidon was doing, that they were getting ready. Some people say he's getting ready for the Karban Pesach. Other people talk about the fact that they waited because they didn't have any supply of grain, and therefore they needed to make food on that day. Now, the Malach comes to him and says, you know, it's time to save Bnei Yisrael. And again, that's part of the idea of Pesach. In the Jewish calendar, there's not just a holiday. There is a cycle in the year. There's a time of Gula. There's a time of Tshuva. There is a time of rededication, let us call it. But each holiday is, on that holiday, that is a period of time in which we have reoccurring events. Pesach is a time of Gula. Pesach is a time not just of Gula at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but it was a time of Gula for many other times. It was a time that Yitzchak was born. It's a time of Gula for lots of different kinds of periods. Tisha B'Av we talk about as being a time of crying. But Tisha B'Av ultimately will be a time of happiness. But that period, each month has its own koach, its own strength. And if you look carefully at the way months are done, and the machlokasim and everything else, the month starts with a certain kind of characteristic. And that characteristic grows until you get to the new moon, to the 15th of the month. And that's why, you know, Pesach and Shavuot and Sukkot are on the 15th of the month. That's true for most things. There's also a whole set of understandings, and these understandings we aren't going to go into extensively, but you should know that there is such a thing that talks about the year being divided into two halves. There's a half of actualization and a half of preparation.
So that's the title
for
the month?
Not in the month, in the year.
So
we have six. We have which means what it does is it takes Pesach, and it says that Sukkot is like a mirror image. The month of Pesach, the month of Gula, is a mirror image to the month of Tshuva, the month of Tishrei, and you see then that one is preparing and one is actualization. In order to have a Gula, you have to do Tshuva. And you have to work on that in a cycle. And the holidays are tied one to another. Yom Kippur, for example, was tied to Purim, even though the months and the times don't work out. But you have a mere reflection of certain of major characteristics of the holiday in the other holiday. And by using that, you can understand the nature of the Chagim a little bit different. And a little, you have to understand both ways, but it's a little bit of a different way of understanding it and developing that understanding. So this was at Nisan. When Gideon is offered the job, he says, no, just as Moshe says. And he also says that one of the standard things is that people don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They think HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt. We'll buy that. We'll buy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu even had the Beis HaMikdash. You can buy that. But, you know, we aren't sure about how applicable the Torah is today. And, you know, we can say that it's all right to ride the shul. Because God was then and now things have changed, or whatever different rationale we call it. And we can even package it and develop it as a whole philosophy. We can call it... No, we can call it, let's say, conservatism. Modern Orthodox is a different question. In terms there's not... Modern Orthodox is essentially from. It's just not... You know, some of the people can use their own kuas or their own understandings, and sometimes it's fine. The things, so it's a lot, but you have it doctrinated in religion, and in the conservative movement, one of the things is they say God did. Some of them say God did give the Torah, but it's no longer applicable. This is part of the doctrine or philosophy. And again, the philosophical basis of the different people is important to understand because that gives you a different insight. We use insight too often. We'll have to go back and erase insight. but you can understand that this same phenomena occurred at this time. And Gideon says, no, just as Moshe and then the Malach talks to him, and Gideon decides that he's going to test the Malach, and he's going to bring a sacrifice. And Gideon brings a great deal of food as a sacrifice. And we have a similar story with Shimshon, with Samson, when Samson, the Malach comes to Shimshon's parents, the same kind of story occurs. He brings a sacrifice. The Malach says, pour the soup, the water over the food, and then it goes up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. In the story of Shimshon, the Malach jumps in and goes up. Here the Malach just disappears. In both stories, the person, in the case of Shimshon's parents, the two people, the father, in this case, just Gidon says, basically, I've seen God, I'm going to die. I've seen this Malach. Now, here there isn't the same kind of response in the story of Shimshon. Shimshon's mother says to him, no. If you were going to die, God would have just killed you. He would have showed you a Malach.
No, but there is such thing, I've heard, that before you die, you see a Malach.
But there is such a thing, but this was a nature of doing a shlichus. And so, that's what she says over here. Here, the Gideon doesn't hear that, but he comes to that recognition. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Gideon, just like with the story of Avraham, Gideon's father is an idol worshiper. And he worships a lot of different idols. So Gideon's father says to him, Gideon, my boy. No, I know. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Gideon, Gideon, your father has these idols. He has an animal, a porah, a cow, a bull that he's going to bring as a sacrifice. And he has the Asherah tree, which is a tree that was used to be worshipped. And he says, go cut down the Asherah tree, take all the wood, kill the cow, put it on a different mizbeah, kill the cow, not as a sacrifice, because Avodah Zorah you can't have any benefit from. Avodah Zorah is Asur B'Hanah. And take another cow. There was another cow that was there that was not worshipped, which was being waited to be brought as a sacrifice. Kill the other cow. Leave both cows on this Mizbeah and burn them with the Asherah tree. So Gideon does that. And he takes 10 men to do that. Now what did we say about Lashon Hara? That's for sure. We have rules about when, if you have more than 3 people that know, we can assume what? That everybody knows. It's common knowledge. It's not the same level. You shouldn't necessarily tell people, but you can assume that everybody knows. That's one of the halachas involving Lashon Hara. But here, we can see that that's what happens. The people see this idol. Two idols are, you know, the idols all being burned, and they see all this, and they say, who did it? And there were 10 men that knew, and therefore they found out that it was Gideon. And they did what Avraham did. They came and they said, let's kill Gideon. With Avraham, his father says, basically, okay, see what happens. And they throw Avraham into the furnace. You know the story of that, and Avram's brother says, I don't know, maybe it's true and maybe not. Let's see what happens. So they threw Avram in, and then he comes out alive, and then they say to his brother, hey, what do you have to say? He says, I believe he came out, I believe. And they throw him in, and that's it for him. But Gideon's father doesn't do that. Gideon's father says, what are you getting upset for? If these people are really, if this tree and this cow and this little piece of wood are really idols, let them fight it out. You know, they'll come down and strike him with lightning. He was blasphemous. He burned them up. He destroyed them. What are you getting upset about? Either they're idols or not. Now, this was somebody who worshipped the idols. But he understood enough about that to answer for his son. And so they called Nothing, of course, happens, and they called Gideon Yerubbaal, that he fought with the Baal and he won. And anyway, Midian begins to hear about all of this, and they gather in the Emek Yisrael. Now, Emek Yisrael is, if you look on your map, is, you don't got a map? Is that what you're laughing about?
No.
What? 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 She needs a map? Oh, here's a map. Is there anybody else who wants to confess to not bringing their map?
They can.
Oh, she didn't get one. Oh, excuses.
Good
excuse.
Wait, I
got one. Oh, Baruch Hashem, yom yom. Anyway, if you look at it, it's in Menashe. It's above the word Menashe to the left of Yisachar, where it says Megiddo and Kadesh. That's the region that we're talking about. Okay, and they call the people. And there's, I can't, you know, if you see the region, you can understand the battle a little bit better, but it is not crucial. There's places where you have an overlooking of a large, large valley, and it's a very good farming area. But the Midianim come, and they... Gideon, Yerubbaal, blows the shofar. And the shofar we use on Rosh Hashanah, but we also use the shofar and a truot to call for war. If you've noticed on Friday, they have a siren. Before they had a good electricity system, they used to use a shofar to call the people to important events, to let them know about Shabbos, or to call them for a battle. And again, it depends on which sound you blow. So they blew the shofar, and all of Gideon's group, the subgroup. Now Menashe is divided into different mishpachot. Each of the tribes have what we call mishpachot, or families within them. Gideon's family comes, and he sends messengers to the other tribes in the northern area. He's not able to send to the south because they've cut it off. And Gideon then does two tests, or he has three tests. The last test, we'll just talk about that. Gideon's tests are not to see whether or not a Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to save them, but how they're going to be saved. I didn't write down the first test. What's the first test? It's on the threshing floor. He has the nevuah. Anyway, the first test is before he calls the people. Gideon is not asleep. The nevuah in general occurs in a sleeping kind of state. And Gideon comes and then has a test in terms of how he's going to save B'nai Yisrael. And he takes a fleece from a lamb, and he puts it on the floor, And he says, if the fleece is wet and the surrounding area is dry, then I know that I am supposed to save Bnei Yisrael. And that happens. Now again, the ground around is not completely dry, because there was avtacha that there would not be, that dew would not stop during the Pesach season, starting from Pesach until Sukkos is the time we don't have rain. Not that now we do, but...
But why you would think it should be the opposite? If it was wet, it should be safe.
Okay, so what he's saying is, he starts, the first test is if it will be wet. And that would mean that the fleece stands for like Israel, for the Jews, and the rest of the ground stands for the other people. And it means that they will have the benefit of having water and having Torah and having goodness, and the rest will be dry. And then he has a second test, which is, he again takes the fleece, but the problem with that is that by nature, that could occur. If you have a rug and there's dew, the ground could dry up, and the thing that's covering it could be wet, even though here it was very wet. But there is a certain natural component. The second test that he wanted to see was if there would be a miraculous miracle. And so he had the same situation, the fleece and the ground. This time the fleece was supposed to be totally dry and the ground would be wet. And that would be an indication that it would be a miraculous kind of saving. And so that's what happens. And so that's basically the end of Perek Zion.